I have always argued that as preacher here at First Presbyterian Church, that I have what is the best seat in the house. Standing here on the chancel affords me a perfect, unobstructed view of our two magnificent stained glass windows. Now, these windows, they are Tiffany-esque, which means they were not made by the famous Tiffany company, but were created in the same style, which was extraordinarily popular at the time. And in some places on these windows, you will even find two layers of painted glass, which gives a 3D effect. On my right side, on the east side of the sanctuary, you will find the Easter window, with its depiction of the angel sitting on the stone next to the empty tomb. And then to my left is the Transfiguration window with its image of Jesus flanked by Moses and Elijah. Now, until this week, I had never considered that there was any connection between these two windows other well, then the obvious fact that they both represent key moments in the Christian story. Jesus' transfiguration and Jesus' resurrection. But this week, I've been thinking about Easter in light of COVID-19. And I've discovered another way that these two windows relate to one another. And what they have in common is caves. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, well, we can call them cavemen because they each had a life-defining experience in a cave. This week, I've been thinking about caves as a metaphor for our lives now under COVID-19. We've all retreated to our own personal caves as means of practicing social distancing, of maintaining a physical distance from other people so as to slow the spread of this deadly and highly contagious virus. For most of us, our caves are pretty comfortable. It's not prison. But our self-imposed quarantine is certainly different from what we are used to. Today, Easter Sunday, we should expect to be gathered together in this sanctuary, bathed in the glow of those windows, singing the hymns of our faith and giving thanks to our God. But we are not. And I am speaking to you at your home, in your cave. Jesus' transfiguration is described to us in the Gospels. Jesus leads three of his disciples up a mountain to pray. And at the top of the mountain, Jesus is transfigured. He is changed. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. And then, suddenly, standing with him there on top of that mountain are Moses and Elijah, and they are conversing together. Our transfiguration window portrays Moses, Elijah, and Jesus standing on that mountain. Moses and Elijah, as you know, are two of the great heroes of the Old Testament. Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt. Elijah was a prophet of the northern kingdom who defended the worship of the Hebrew God against the incursion of worship of the Canaanite god Baal. When Moses helped his people escape from Egypt, they then lived in the wilderness for many years. And during that wilderness time, God communicated with the people through Moses. And for Moses, God was just a voice. But Moses wanted to see God. Moses needed to see what he was dealing with. Moses could not in confidence ask his people to obey him if he wasn't convinced that this God was what it claimed to be. So, Moses asked God to see God's glory. And God agrees, but stipulates that God cannot see God, that Moses cannot see God's face, because, as God says, "For no one shall see me and live." God instructs Moses to go to the top of the mountain, and there he will stand in a cave on the mountain. And as God's glory passes by the mountain, God will cover Moses with his hand in the cave to shield him. And then, as God is headed away, the hand will be removed and Moses will be able to see God's back from the cave. But God's face will not be seen. The second figure in our window is Elijah. And Elijah is recognized as one of the great prophets of ancient Israel. On Thursday of this week, as Jews celebrated Passover with a Seder meal, they set an extra cup at the table. They set it there for Elijah. Elijah served God in the 9th century BC, during the reign of King Ahab. And under King Ahab, the Israelites' worship of the god Baal increased. And this was due in part to Ahab having married the Phoenician princess Jezebel, who herself was a priestess of Baal. Elijah preached vehemently against this worship of Baal by the Israelites, and this put him at odds, of course, with the king and the queen. And this leads, ultimately, to the great showdown between Elijah and the prophets of Baal in that contest on Mount Carmel, a contest to determine whose God could bring fire from the heavens. And then, when Elijah and his God win, Elijah has the priest of Baal executed. And so in retribution, Jezebel orders Elijah's death, and Elijah is forced to flee the country. Certain that all is lost, Elijah runs as far as he can out into the wilderness, and then he lays down under a tree to die. But God sends an angel with bread and water for Elijah, which provides him the strength to continue on. And he travels on some more until he comes to a cave where he spends the night. The voice of God comes to Elijah in that cave and asks what he is doing there. And Elijah has explained to God that he has caved in to the pressure. All is lost. He is the last of the prophets, and now Jezebel's people intend to kill him. So God orders Elijah to get up and go out of that cave and stand on the mountainside. Elijah does so, and a great wind blows up. But God is not in the wind. And after the wind, there is an earthquake, but God is not in the earthquake. And then there is fire, but God is not in the fire either. And then there is the sound of sheer silence. And that is God. And God gives Elijah instruction to go back to work as a prophet. And he obeys. In our gospel reading for today, we encounter the familiar passage of Jesus in a cave. This cave is a tomb. It's a tomb cut into the rock for the purpose of a burial. After Jesus' trial He is executed by crucifixion. His body was placed into this tomb, and this tomb was then sealed with a large stone. But when the Sabbath had passed, two women, Mary Magdalene and another woman named Mary, they go to this tomb where Jesus' body has been placed. And when they arrive, the ground shakes. An angel of the Lord appears and pushes the stone away from the entrance of the cave. And then the angel sits on that stone. This angel, well, it looks like lightning. And its clothes are white like snow. The guards at the tomb, they are paralyzed with fear. The angel speaks to Mary, saying, "Do not be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, as he said. Come, see the place where he lay. Go quickly and tell his disciples that he has been raised from the dead. He is going ahead of you to Galilee, and there you will see him." In these three figures, Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, these figures who are present at the Transfiguration, we discover three people who had transformative experiences within caves. And each one of these experiences is an expression of God's glory. Moses witnesses God directly, which provides him the courage to continue leading his people to the promised land. Elijah discovers that God's power is not in wind or earthquake or fire. God's power is in God's voice. And that voice speaks to Elijah and supplies him with the courage to continue his work as a prophet. Jesus' dead body is placed into a cave, but God resurrects him to life. At that first Easter, Jesus' disciples and his followers, they were in caves as well, but these were caves of grief and despair that their Lord was dead. The women go to the tomb to see for themselves. The rest of the disciples remain trapped in their own caves, unable to escape. These are their caves of fear. But the angel sends the women back to the disciples with the message that Jesus has been raised. But why does he send them to the disciples? I mean, at the end, hadn't they failed Jesus miserably? They denied him. They abandoned him. They ran for their lives. Were these people worthy to be disciples? No, of course not. No, they weren't. But God sends the sinners, the failures, the lost, the scared, the weak, with the promise of renewal. This renewal is salvation. In the great covenant that God makes with Abraham, and in the many ratifications of that covenant since, God has always promised to stay with us, to watch over us, to bring us salvation. Time after time when we have been unfaithful and God really should have just kicked us to the curb, God sticks with us. God upholds that covenant. And this covenant finds its ultimate expression at Easter. God comes to us as one of us. And then tragically, in an act of unfaithfulness, we kill God. But God does not stay dead. God does not leave us. And because of the eternal promise of the covenant, our God continues to embrace us. The promise of Easter is that no matter why we enter into our cave, God will be there. We may go into the cave discouraged like Moses, or frightened like Elijah, or even at the end of our life like Jesus. But God will stay with us. We will experience God's glory. We will be given new direction, new strength, and a new life to live as God's holy people. On this Easter Sunday, we are all of us cave women and cave men. And we'll need to stay that way until the virus has cleared. But when we do emerge from our caves, our God will be with us, and we shall have new life. Amen.